This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Oh, man. Blue collar scholars, Johnny Lupinacci, producer Anya in the house. Good Tuesday afternoon. This is back to our stomping grounds here. This is, you know, we should feel comfortable on Tuesday nights. This is where Busted Pencils got its start. And now, though, people are going, what do you mean Tuesday? That's why I'm always here. But why aren't you listening Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays? Just wanted to put that out there. Yes, Busted Pencils every night of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You can check us out. The number is 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Yeah, we're going to take some calls tonight, sure that we got some good luck out there. Calls are welcome. But, you know, John, I'm thinking about this as we come into tonight's show and lots of education news. We've been typically, you know, on Tuesdays, try to do trending education news. And we're typically around the K-12, but tonight, I said, let's take a little pivot, although this affects everybody, and using the headline from, the source that we typically like to cite on this, you know, the K-12 dive, FAFSA, that's F-A-F-S-A, the acronym, FAFSA submissions from high school seniors are down 38%. For people who are out there going, what the heck's a FAFSA? Did Tim just actually say that? Yeah, a FAFSA. It's the free application for student aid. So there go, Johnny, right? Free application. In other words, this is when you are planning on going to college. So you're a senior in high school right now. Your family is thinking, I'm going to go to college in the fall. I want to see if I can get some financial aid. There's a free application that the federal government puts out that you're allowed to fill out and submit to, you know, the Department of Education, and then that will be sent to all of the colleges you apply to. And then colleges can use that application to determine if and, you know, how much there are financial aid packages that can be offered to you to make the possibility of going to college or a university a real dream. So the FAFSA application is one of those indicators, Johnny, about what enrollment might look like in the fall. So pointing that out there and saying, well, why do we care about enrollment in colleges in the fall? Well, I got to point out, you know, Northland College, way up north in Wisconsin, way up in Ashland, Wisconsin, right on Lake Superior, big announcement a few days ago, $12 million in the next 12 days, or they will be shutting down for next year, shutting down an environmental liberal arts college. The reason I point this out, my son is an alumni from Northland College, went there, loved it. Incredible place, way up in the North Country, though, beautiful on Lake Superior. Found, you know, liberal arts, but the environmental focus. And he sends me a note last night and says, Dad, did you know this? And I was like, Luke, this is actually frightening. But as, you know, producer Anya points out here, goes, hey, guess what? The UW system, too. Green Bay announced that in January it's going to suspend in-person classes at Marinette County. The UW Wisconsin-Milwaukee will be closing the Waukesha campus at the end of spring 2025. St. Norbert's in Wisconsin lays off around, you know, a dozen faculty members because of program cuts to dwindling enrollment. Man, it is tough out there right now if you're a college and looking to enrollment. And so when you see this headline, Johnny, if you're an admissions counselor, if you're the vice president of enrollment at a college and you're seeing 38% down, that's got to be freaking you out. Agree or disagree?
I mean, agree. But again, you're putting this in this either or context, and it's an important topic, and so is the, I'll call it, the balancing out of enrollment into our higher education institutions. You know, there was a massive inflation of enrollment At a certain point, there was this idea of unlimited growth applied to higher education as an industry. Again, we've talked about that education ought not be an industry per se with the same kind of business growth plans as per se maybe television sales or, you know, or other areas of economic growth. But however, we'll put that on the side. We'll put that pause button on that discussion of should or shouldn't higher education be in, you know, an economic industry,
growth business.
Yeah. But let's put that on pause. This is actually very important. I don't care what campus you're on right now, whether you're a small private institution, whether you're a liberal arts college, whether you're, you know, a big, you know, land grant university. This has been a huge thing because enrollment tuition dollars is a big piece of every institution's operating budget. It is massive. And we've talked about it on here, like the reduction of state funding to public education. Mm-hmm. That's also true for higher education. And so it doesn't matter what campus you're on, community college campuses around this country, you know, there is a tremendous amount of pressure on student enrollment, tuition dollars, right? We are dependent on those tuition dollars through enrolled students. 80, let me make sure I get the right percentage. 80.
Oh, he's going for a fact.
Yeah, 84% of all college students in this country receive federal aid. So that means at a minimum, Tim, 84% of all the college students fill out FAFSA. Right. That's how you get to, that's what determines your eligibility for state aid. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether you get that in the form of loan, we could get into a whole
state and federal. Yeah. All the different, but for now, we're just saying financial aid to go to college.
This is the step that is required to get there. And Tim, so we think about this for our listeners, all the institutions are dependent on tuition dollars for their operating budgets. They rely on a certain number. And after COVID, things really took a hit, and everybody understood that because, hey, right, like COVID, maybe I'm not going to go to college right away next year. You know, I'm not even sure I finished high school. We haven't been in session. We've been online. I mean, there's been a real blur of what, you know, kind of when you started the show and you talked about high school seniors, there's been a real blur of what that transition from high school to college looks like to higher education. In some contexts, it meant entering careers and workforce for more students than we historically have seen just go on to college. In other contexts, it meant a gap year or maybe extending that idea of a gap year into a gap, you know, moment. Maybe it's a little longer than a year, figuring out where and what you want to do. Also, Tim, the factor of that higher education is highly in question. The value of higher education, given the student loan debt ratio in this country, is in question, and it ought to be. Is it a good return on investment? In an ideal world, Tim, you and I probably both will say yes over and over again. It is worth it, but
yes,
but it's also gotten so expensive. And we talked about the wages for so many of the things that young people want to go into.
Right,
it doesn't balance out the debt that you accrue for getting the degree for the. Ideally, the career you feel called to, the interest and passion that sparks. Maybe you want to be a journalist. Maybe you want to do information sciences and you really love archiving. And, you know, you find and spark these passions and interests in college and they're supported. And boom, you get out and you find out, wait, there's not jobs that I can afford to take.
Ain't no money in archiving.
We've got a huge economic problem. We've talked about it on the show before. I mean, it's not exactly the headline that we're going to get into tonight, but it's there, right? So we have this already, this question of is higher education worth it, right? And I think that's an important thing that us in higher education, so professors and people in higher education who are, you know, doing that kind of critical work to ask ourselves, what are we going to be now that things are different and they're changing? And that's a good change. Change is not a bad thing. It's gonna, it's got, but there has to be some change, and that's on the horizon. At the same time, it means these numbers are lower. We just don't have a lot of young people or people just entering into these colleges willy-nilly, like, hey, I guess that's what comes next. So the numbers are evening out. I will say that. I'm not the sky is falling guy. The numbers are evening out. But that's all happening, right, Tim? So that's all background to this headline that this year, FAFSA, yeah, that form you talked about that everyone has to fill out, and when they decide, hey, I think I'm going to go to college. It doesn't matter whether you're new, whether you're high school senior, whether you're returning to college, you fill out the FAFSA. Well, that got delayed this year. It got streamlined from 108 questions to, I think, 30-some questions, and it was going to be new and easier to use, but it got delayed in its release, which had a domino effect, right? Okay. And that domino effect meant that usually we know by now everybody who's planning on going to school in the fall, how much money they're getting. They know how much it's going to cost them. And right now, in best case scenario, only a few people know this. Mm-hmm. The most fast, efficient working, you know, programs I know of out there were able to package this stuff by late February, early March. Here we are. Most students who are considering college for the fall don't know how much money they're getting, nor do the universities know, because they can't make the decision based on not knowing. So it's all speculation. So already all that background, I've been going on and on about here, already have that background of uncertainty, stress, and anxiety on these institutions as things even out. And now we don't even know the number for the fall, months into when we usually know. So budgets are all hearsay, hope. Let's kind of figure out these numbers. And in the meantime, cuts are being made because you can't run anything on money that's not there.
Ain't nothing for free out there, Johnny Lupinacci. The number, busted. Not in this country. 855-752-4842. A lot of information to put out there and digest. But the FAFSA, the free application for student aid, applications down 38% from where it was last year at this time, striking the fear in admissions offices all across the country. And we go very specifically to Wisconsin, where Northland College, way up north in Ashland, Wisconsin, makes the announcement that they need $12 million quick or they're going to close next year. St. Norbert College laying off a dozen people. University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee campus, the Waukesha branch, shutting down 25. It's out there. It's a bloodbath, potentially, Johnny. So we're just pointing this out there. Whoa, how do we bring those numbers back up? Or should they be brought back up? I'm not sure if Johnny Lupinacci thinks that we're ever going to grow these enrollments again. It's busted pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. More when we get back. Pollution, it's burning my lungs. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Yeah, we give it all. We give it all every night of the week, Monday, every Tuesday, night. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Busted pencils, yes, we're out there. We're doing it. The number's 855-752-4842, 855-752. Tuesday trending education news. Nothing that really affects, I mean, what did I say? A big news story, 38% of the FAFSA, that's the free application for student aid, applications are down 38% from where they were at this time last year, a potential indicator that enrollment in the fall might be on the downward slope. However, and not however, at the same time, recognizing that small colleges, big colleges, land grant, you know, everybody out there right now, enrollment is a big, big, big to do. We said, you know, the news from Wisconsin, Northland College, way up north up there on Lake Superior in Ashland, potential if they need $12 million or they're going to close next year. And just saying how that's happening everywhere. I've got this across the country. West Virginia University, $30 million deficit, cutting up to upwards of 20-some programs. Penn State University, $35 million in the hole. So for anybody who's out there going, well, yeah, the Northland Colleges and the St. Norbert's and the private liberal arts colleges, they're having a tough time. everybody's having a tough time. And Johnny, you kind of laid out there this whole idea of going, first of all, maybe the first original mistake was to assume constant and never ending growth in education and framing it as if it's a growth industry instead of it's a public good or a service of providing education, and the reality of treating it as a growth industry. Well, guess what? Finally, the growth stops. And one of the biggest indicators of the growth issue here is simple demographics. You know, simple demographics. 15 years ago, most areas that are, you know, somewhat suburban or rural, you know, semi-rural, you're looking at graduation rates that are 15% less than they were 15 years ago. So that means that there are, you know, so 100 kids graduate from your high school. Well, 85 are graduating this year. And guess what? 85 are graduating at the next high school, at the next high school, at the next high school. All of those students, though, are all submitting, well, if they filled out their FAFSA, they're all submitting applications to the same colleges. All these colleges are fighting for less and less numbers. And man, it gets rough out there. What are you going to do? And Johnny, you kind of made the point to say, should college, you're not totally there, 855-752-4842. But it's not that should you go to college, but you're wondering, you know, has it outpaced? Is it too expensive? Was it the growth industry? All of those things that framed it around it. And I just come back to going, but if kids want to go to college and the local school that they knew, that they grew up around, it's 2 hours from their area. They thought they were going to go to this college. The small town that sit, you know, Ashland, Wisconsin, with Northland, the major employer in the area. This isn't just an indication of poor liberal arts colleges going out of business. This is an economic catastrophe for some of these small towns. That's where I'm putting it, Johnny, is going, this isn't just as simple as declining enrollment. These declining enrollments impact communities.
Absolutely.
And so what are we going to, so what are we going to do with that impact?
Well, I mean, I don't know, Tim. I mean, I stumped him.
Y'all heard that out there. I stumped the Lupinacci. That's all right, well, Joe. That, we got Joanne on the line. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's get to the caller, and I'll come back to it.
Okay. Joanne, help us out. What's going on with college going in the future?
Thank you so much, Joanne. For this great. All right. Thanks so much for this great discussion. I'm worried about the types of cohorts that we're looking at, the types of audiences that we're looking at as universities. The returning adult student audience has not been served well. There's an occasional returning adult student award or something like that, but everywhere you go, there are pictures of young people and this traditional student market. 20 years ago, when I was teaching, the class was filled with returning adult students, and it takes 4 or 5 students in a classroom who are of non-traditional age for those folks to feel comfortable, and I taught differently. I was able to have more discussion. People brought up great examples. The quality of the work was higher because those students set the pace, the returning adult students, and then all of a sudden we lost almost all of those students. It's tough to find returning adult students in my institution. So, again, we haven't served them. We haven't met them where they are. There's a market out there. There are people who would rather study together and go to class and have expert professors out there. I'm hoping that if you're listening out there, you know, somebody from this audience is listening to call in. And myself, you know, when I retire, I'm going to try to take some of those classes. You can take classes free as a retiree at the University of Wisconsin at Madison over here. But how do we attract those folks? Thanks again for a great discussion.
Well, Joanne, and thank you for calling and listening all the time. Yeah, Johnny. So, you know, the whole idea of who is the student that higher education is serving. And Joanne points out here the potential, maybe some of the decline is because we have lost focus on recognizing access to education and instead maybe really went too far in imagining that every graduating high school senior was going to be the new college student. And what about all these returning adults out there? I can tell you in the past institutions I've been at, the passion and the know and the need and the desire to want to find returning adult students to get them back, those people who went to college for a little bit, who stopped out, those adults who want to, you know, want to skill up, they're out there. How do you get them to come to campus? Good question. And are they potentially part of the solution to some of these low declining enrollments that we're seeing all across higher education in the colleges? Johnny, thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it's a complicated puzzle, Tim. As you brought up, also you kind of like dovetailed in the shrinking economy, like a closing of a university in a small town, and what that does to labor, because university is more than just professors. I mean, it puts the squeeze on that for sure, because if you don't have students to teach, you don't have a job as a professor. So even though that myth that like professors have, you know, for life employment, even at tenured institutions, it's all dependent on students being enrolled. I think college, so that's a big piece. It's the same kind of question we ask, like if a hospital closes, or, you know, if a military base moves, and that military base, you know, is a big piece of that local economy. So higher education is part of our local economies for so many college towns. Yeah. And I'll put kind of quotes up around college towns, because there are small towns that depend on the kind of revenue that comes from, you know, families visiting, students attending, people working for the university in a variety of capacities, attending sporting events, these kinds of things. So like I said, everything's changing. Joanne, our caller, often brings this up. What about these online, you know, universities, or these online programs too, or these sort of global options? So it's really important to think about that there's competition in this growth industry. I think things are leveling out. It's going to be rough, but we can get back into that non-traditional, not like 18-year-old student when we come back.
That's the way you need it, any way you want it. Yeah, that's right. Any way you want it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny, you didn't, you know, any way you want it. That's what we do here, man. We do this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Busted Pencils. The number's 855-752-4842. Drop in FAFSA applications indicating potentially hard times for colleges that are already struggling, pointing out that in Wisconsin, particularly Northland College, way up on Lake Superior in Ashland, Wisconsin, $12 million in the next, I don't know, it's like 20 days, or they're going to close next year. Layoffs at St. Norbert's, closures of the UW, some of the branch campuses out there. Joanne, great caller. We're going to come back to her question, but we've got Jack from Merrimack on the line. Jack, what's happening?
Well, I was just wondering, or just thinking, I'm wondering how many young people who basically would have a difficult time financially going to college because of the increases in tuition aren't even bothering to fill out student aid form, because they look at some of their not too much older generation people that they know, and they see them in debt for their college education because their financial aid is borrowing as well as scholarships and assistantships and such. And they look at these people and they see that they're going to be in debt for 5, 10, 15, 20 years trying to pay this stuff back, almost no matter what kind of a job they get. Now, if they happen to get a really high-paying job, possibly software engineering or in the medical field, as a doctor, for example, they have a chance of paying this stuff back in some kind of a reasonable time. But unless you're lucky like my son, who had two parents who had middle class to upper middle class jobs, and paid virtually 100%, paid all the tuition. He still picked up his books and his living expenses, stuff like that. But his parents basically paid the 100% of the tuition while he was going to school.
Yeah, it's producer Anya. I can speak to that all you want. Go jump in there, producer Anya.
Well, to Jack's question about were younger people looking at their older friends who have debt already, I have to say, for me, doing the FAFSA and taking the loans, it was never up for debate. It was you got accepted to the school. I got accepted to UW-Milwaukee. Very happy I went there. I did 5 years there. But for me, to answer Jack's question, no, it wasn't something you could really even take into consideration, because if I wanted to go to school, I had to pay them. And truly, my only option was paying them from FAFSA. And I'll just say, you know, I am so happy to hear that they've shortened it. It sucks that this is why it got rolled out so slow. But for the first four of my 5 years of school, doing the FAFSA was like pulling teeth. It is the most painful experience. I hope my parents aren't listening, but especially if maybe you have some less technically aware, maybe boomer aged parents, it's like pulling teeth. So I'm glad to hear it's shorter. But to answer Jack's question, I don't think there's any young person who needs it who's not doing it because of something else they've seen. If they're not doing it, it's because they either don't have the resources from the people who claim them as a dependent to fill it all the way out. I was in that situation 1 year. Or we're just, I think the young people that aren't applying for FAFSA are the same young people that aren't going to college, because you have to at this point. There is no other option.
And I do think, I do think Jack brings up an important point too. And thank you, Anya. That is the lived experience, right, of Anya's generation and all the students I talk to every year, like, oh, the FAFSA, oh, I got to get in touch with my parent. We got to fill this out. And it's an ordeal. It's like doing taxes, right? And it really is. It's a royal pain in the behind.
I'd even say it's worse than filing taxes. Now, I'm saying this as someone who's only ever filed as a single person. I'm unmarried and remain unmarried. But to have to hunt down, I'm calling my parents, Mom, what is your social security number? I know you gave it to me last year. You said I couldn't write it down anywhere because you were scared the ID people were going to get it, but I need it again to get my money. It is truly at times worse than even filing taxes.
And I also think Jack from Merrimack brings up an important point that I think dovetails into Joanne saying, like, you know, every college has to think about what is it they're offering? Like, what is the brand of that, the education and the experience and the uniqueness of, we'll use Anya's case as an example of being a student at UW Milwaukee. And we've really, I think most places really leaned into that maybe antiquated idea that it was, you know, 18-year-olds showing up with like an extension of high school and figuring it out. When for so many, I will call them like working class institutions around this country, the age diversity was part of that brand. And I don't know if that got lost, but it was this whole idea of, hey, maybe you want to change careers, or hey, maybe you at a particular time, you know, served in the military and did your, you know, service. And then, you know, you're out now and you have Pell Grant and you want to, you know, like go back to school, become a nurse, or go back to school, become an accountant, or like Jack brought up, a software engineer. You know, I think that's important for folks listening who are in higher education, like really get your brand right. And think about diversity in a multitude of ways, and include in that age and second career. And we've even referred to those in the industry as non-traditional students. I think we even got to get off that. It's not non-traditional students. It's just a diversity of students who want to become nurses, who want to become teachers, who want to become, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Financial accountants, CFAs. But the other part that I think Jack brought up is, I do think so many generations close to the generation right now of the quote unquote traditional college student, we'll say, you know, graduating from high school or moving on after high school, has parents who are crippled. That's probably a word I shouldn't use. It's a very ableist term, but who are, you know, who are, you know, just burdened with insurmountable debt from their college degree, who are sharing reality. I make more doing X, Y, or Z. I run a restaurant. I serve at a bar. I am a barber. I opened a tattoo shop. We can fill in the blanks of professions, right? That don't require a college education to be successful in. And I think a lot of young people are seeing that right now, and they're learning, they're coming up in it, and they're saying, wait a minute, I think I might want to, be in the beauty industry. I think I might want to be a fashion designer. And there are amazing schools for that.
Mm-hmm. But you
don't necessarily need to be enrolled at quote unquote 4-year or even 2-year institutions to do that. And I think more young people are experiencing that right now and saying, I'm going to go do what I want to do. And I'm pretty sure I can make a fair shake at it. I hope they can, because we all need a diversity of services in our community, and our economies need to be diverse. Because Tim, that brings us back to that closure of a university in a town that is a fatal blow to the local economy. We need diverse economies in our community. Yeah, we need a multitude of services that I think higher ed, intentionally or unintentionally moved away from, right? As an education complex, it started to be in this world of like, well, we sell education, but what do we do with that education? And where does it fit into our local economy? That's a huge question that I think really institutions have to grapple with and embrace for the change. But before we get any further, because, I'll just keep going. We have L.A. Tom on the line. L.A. Tom, what's happening?
Hey, guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Also, we need to get money out of politics. That's the biggest problem that we have in our country right now. It's interesting because, I would think maybe some of these NFL football teams that have their preseason in these small little towns throughout Wisconsin, because of the fact that they don't want as many disruptions for players and stuff, maybe they could actually start kicking in a little bit of money for the actual schooling that goes on in some of these places. As far as the right wing, I don't mean to make it political, but it is that apparently they want to move away more and more from a liberal arts education where you see things in just, different ways. I went to school my first 2 years, we're at River Falls, and my last 2 years were at St. Norbert. And, I really didn't even know the difference between private and public at that time. And so stupid I was about this stuff. That's why I always push, people to understand the difference between private and public. But, it's interesting because I really didn't see a difference in the universities that much. It's more about, what it is that I applied myself with. Except for the fact that the liberal arts education made me, doubt my faith, to coming back to a totally different way of looking at the world and looking at my faith in a different way. And I was so thankful that it actually did challenge me in that way. And, I hope that these small towns aren't losing these universities. But I also know that, there's schools like University of Wisconsin-Stout that actually you go to that school to kind of be what you're going to be. Like my niece went there for packaging, and then two of my other nieces and nephews went there for packaging, and that's what they're doing today. They're working for General Mills, or they're working for Land O'Lakes, 3M, but they actually found jobs. So it was kind of like a technical college, but it was still a 4-year university. So I just hope that people see the value of education, not just as a getting the job, but also the fact that you do learn in your 18s to your 21, the different things that you would not learn from just going to work right away.
Yeah. LA Tom, man, lots there. Love it, love it, love it. Hey, wanna go grab this one too. Mark, Mark from the SAC is there too. Ooh. Lots of callers tonight. What's happening, Mark?
Yeah, I actually have a familiar connection to Northland College, where my mother actually went there on scholarship for the first 2 years of college before she married my dad in the late 50s at Northland College. And I believe my uncle was actually on staff up at Northland College, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, that I can't check back for them now because they're both have moved on, but... That it is just kind of sad to hear that, you know, that Northland College is in such dire straits with basically what is it's a huge amount of money, but it's not a huge amount of money considering the amount of money that our legislature has holed up and is determined to give in tax breaks to the to people that don't really need another tax break.
Well, yeah, yep. I mean, our priorities, and Johnny Lupinacci, you pointed there, you know, in the texting in the chat there. Great point. How do we get here? State funding for higher education went away from tax funded to individually funded, which guess what? From the college's standpoint, though, it still cost the amount of money. In fact, it went more money that money then got shifted to tuition. And man, we end up in this mess. And so we've got a whole bunch of, you know, kind of crazy chaos here. Less students graduating from high school. The amount of money going to pay for it has increased. The number of students who, Johnny, you point out saying, you know, going like, hey, guess what? There are other things to do right now, making that decision. And then how many students out there who could be going to college don't even know because the colleges themselves have not been really good at pointing out why they might have a place at their institution because of being too hyper-focused on traditional 18-year-olds. Man, there's a lot here. It's Busted Pencils. The number's 855-752-4842. Johnny and Tim, break it down when we get back. Ah, yeah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number 855-752-4842. Lots of great callers. Joanne, Mark, LA Tom, Jack, everybody out there. Hey, you can call too. I said numbers 855-752-4842. LA Tom sends in a text. St. Norbert could stop building all those new buildings on campus. Oh man, there's all kinds of little things out there that, yeah, going like, you know, when the money train runs out, did we think about that before we built all of these other capital improvements? I don't know. There's a lot there, Johnny, but you know, thinking about this, I want to go back to LA Tom though. Shouldn't we be promoting though more education for all of us? And in that sense, then these institutions of higher education, the fact that they're losing enrollment, declining, isn't that a statement of our value in education then to potentially say that we don't see the importance anymore? And in fact, the war on knowledge, the war on learning, the war on understanding, you know what? Another result of that war is that people are saying, you know what? Heck with school. You know what? The more we have people saying the heck with college, I tell you what, I get worried about our future 10, 20 years from now when students don't have the benefit of not a private liberal arts, but a liberal arts general education, a four-year degree, because we come back to going and say, is a four-year degree worth it? I think the answer is yes when you talk about what LA Tom was pointing out there, because it's not just about the skill set to make a living. It's also about the knowledge about life and how you go in and become a citizen and how you interact with everybody else out there. College still provides that opportunity for so many people to find out lots of interesting different things. So I'm concerned that when we just kind of push colleges down and say, hey, you know what? They're not going to make it. We got to be thinking about going, but you know what? Shouldn't everybody be allowed or encouraged or in fact given the opportunity to get some type of a four-year degree? I'm just kind of bringing it back to that, thinking about the reality of of going, man, if we have this many people not getting a full education, I'm concerned, Johnny.
Well, Tim, you know what? I think institutions of higher education have a moment of humility in terms of, you know, this idea that we don't want to assume that you have to go to college to become intelligent, to be intelligent or to be good at something. And in fact, institutions are sometimes slow to change, and there is massive need for change. There is a lot of careers who that like the skills necessary to be competitive or to be at the cutting edge in those careers require different skill sets. And so there's a little bit of a lag, I think, in these institutions, and the secret's out to young people. You might not need to be at one of those schools in order to gain those skills necessary to be great at what you want to do. So I think that's one piece. The other piece is, you know, like, again, you said it before the break, how do we get here? You know, and there was a massive shift. There used to sort of be an old saying, and it was sort of an unwritten rule that we went by in higher ed is, you know, you should be able to make in the summer as a young person enough money to what it, to the expense cost for a year of school. Okay. And that traditionally was kind of like the balance, like, hey, right, how much should school cost? Well, it shouldn't be something that is inaccessible to any working person. Maybe you come from a wealthy family and they can afford more, send you to a private, or, you know, or pay for, you know, a special kind of program. Those will always existed and always will exist. But the unwritten rule was school should cost about as much as a young person could make in those months where they aren't in school. Traditionally, it was summer employment. And a lot of our economy had good summer employment opportunities for young people. A couple of things happened, you know, with labor shortages and labor changes in this country and, you know, North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement and NAFTA and a lot of global economics where labor got outsourced and jobs went elsewhere, which put unemployment at a record level, which put young people in competition with like grown folks, which almost eliminated employment for that idea of summer employment. Simultaneously, around the same time, this is a little bit of like a history lesson, contemporary history in global economics. Around the same time, states started to roll back funding. So you were talking about, shouldn't everybody have access to higher education? Wouldn't that be great? I'm like peer countries, and this is again bad terminology, but global economics in other developed countries, you were just like, hey, I think I want to be a nurse. Let me apply to nursing school. And it's covered as my access as a citizen of that country to higher education. Wow, what a novel concept. It's sort of like universal healthcare. But at the same time, Tim, as we started to defund public education in our elementary schools, that trickled up to higher ed as well. And so around that same time is that loss of summer employment and that age-old understanding that, hey, if you want to go to school, it's not exactly, you know, quote-unquote free here in the United States. But it's about as much as it would cost you to work kind of hard in the summer, get a job, you know, do that labor and, you know, have that employment for, you know, 3-4 months. And you would be able to have enough money to pay for your school. It wasn't certainly enough to be like a wealthy student, but it was enough to get through. And we used to have that, even that old sort of cartoon of like the struggling college student, you know, these are your college years. That was a known cultural thing. But in that same move where we stopped state funding to education, so where tax dollars went to permanent budgets in institutions of higher education, we started to individualize where that money was going to come from. We said, it's going to come from tuition. And the states rolled back what they gave to colleges or what they awarded to colleges to run. And colleges made up that shortfall with tuition dollars. And so we're like, hey, how are these kids going to pay for it? This is never going to work. And you know what? The powers that be, our government, that Tom reminds us is we the people, but it was pretty centralized. And this decision was like, hold on, we've got the answer for you. It's going to come in the form of loans as federal aid. And so go ahead and jack these prices up because you need the money. And we're going to like credit card version of this. We're going to front load it with student loan debt. And so it was individualized into we the people. It became our expense rather than our shared expense, our individual expense. and we just jacked up. We've just continually increased the prices since then.
Man, what an episode. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Tomorrow night, Educators Amplified, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie going to be in the house. Hey, everybody, though. Higher education, it should be there for everybody. Busted Pencils, see y'all tomorrow night.